Hello, and welcome to the Scale 3X podcast. Today we have a presentation with Clint Oram of Sugar CRM titled Open Source and Enterprise Applications. Clint is the open source project leader for Sugar CRM, an open source CRM suite. He and the Sugar CRM team were recognized in October 2004 as SourceForge's Project of the Month. Notes and slides from this presentation are available online at www.socallinuxexpo.org/podcast.
For those of you that didn't know, my name is Clint Oram, and I am the open source project director for the Sugar CRM open source project. Over the course of the next hour, or actually about 40 minutes, I'm going to spend some time talking about, first, what is CRM, for those of us who can only spell it, then who is Sugar CRM, and then kind of why open source and CRM are such a great match. I'm going to end about 15, 20 minutes early, hopefully, depending if I can how the timing works out here, just to open it up for questions, let you guys ask some questions. I know everybody's interested these days on what exactly, how does the business model work, what is Sugar CRM, what's going on there. We've had a lot of momentum over the last several months as we just got started as a company back in June, actually. But before we get into that, let's talk about CRM for a few minutes. Now, my background is I've been in the CRM industry for over 5 years now. In fact, the entire founding team amongst the three of us, we have over 20 years combined experience in the customer relationship management industry. I've spent the past 5 years as a product manager developing customer service solutions in the CRM industry. So CRM, customer relationship management, everybody, it applies to every industry, every business that has customers. Right, and hopefully most businesses do actually have customers. The basic idea where it all kind of started was around business process automation, basically automating steps, tracking information, allowing customer service reps to track who's calling about what. Right, and then as time evolved, the idea around getting some insight about your customers, like who's buying what, why are they buying, who's calling in, who's the most expensive customer, that sort of thing, has led to, in the last several years, this idea around customer insight, and finally kind of culminating in this nirvana of the 360-degree view of the customer. That idea being is from the time that they first hear about the company as a prospect through the life cycle of selling a product to them actually being a customer and providing a customer service to them, give me that full view of what my customers are doing with us as a company. And so what that translates to is marketing automation products. Typically in marketing products, you see campaign management, list management, email marketing. We all know email marketing, otherwise known as spam cannons, right? There's also list management, which is the idea of you rent a list from somebody else and you do direct mailing to that based upon that list, or you do email marketing based upon that list. Campaign management being you kind of track all that activity together under the context of a campaign, and then you use some closed-loop analysis at the back end on what your most effective campaigns are. That's the idea of marketing automation. Salesforce automation, also known as SFA, really kind of got started about 15 years ago, and it's basically the idea of contact tracking for the most part. Anybody in the room a sales rep? Nope? Okay. Have you ever heard of products like ACT? Salesforce.com, that sort of thing. Tracking who you talk to, when you talk to them last, what you're selling to them, what stage in the selling process you're at, what's your quota for the quarter, managers being able to forecast the projected amount of revenue into the business based upon what the sales reps are selling. That's usually under the umbrella of sales automation or Salesforce automation. Now, my particular background is customer service. That's where I've spent the last several years. And customer service is case tracking. Basically, if you ever called into a call center, you ever send an email to Expedia, anything like that, if you call Expedia, they're using an application that I helped design at my previous job. And that's tracking cases. That's customer self-service, knowledge base, email response applications. If you've ever heard of a company called Kana, they're kind of the premier email response solution out in the industry. Okay, sound good? Kind of mapped it all in together. And the whole idea there is companies really want to get some insight into what's going on with their customers, starting from marketing, going through sales, going through customer service, and then kind of the new thing that everybody's been talking about over the last several years is that customer service is actually sometimes a great selling opportunity, right? Somebody calls in and they're happy at the end of their call with the problem that they had. Maybe it's an opportunity to cross-sell, upsell, and that sort of thing. That's what everybody's talking about these days, and And that's why you're getting all those great phone calls and all that other stuff. We're getting so good these days at selling, right? So let's take a couple minutes and talk about the history of CRM. The reason I want to talk about the history of CRM is because it's so closely tied to the technology advances that have been going on over the years. From 1970 to, I'm kind of just choosing dates here roughly, so if anybody knows the industry too well, my dates may be off compared to what other people say, but from basically 1970 to 1995, when you said CRM, when you said customer relationship management, everybody thought of just customer service applications. Okay, this idea of sales automation and marketing automation came a little bit later. And really kind of got its foundation with the airline industry starting up the call center so that people could call in and change their airline reservations and all that kind of stuff. And it was all green screen terminals, mainframes, all that, AS400s, all those different types of technology really drove the industry at that point in time. And then in the kind of starting in the late 80s, but really kicked off in the early 90s, was the idea of Salesforce automation. And the reason why Salesforce automation really took off was because of a shift in technology. And that shift in technology was both the advent of laptops, so that somebody out in the field could actually type in their information while they're in the field instead of being back in the office, and also client-server technology and the ability to have server in the background and sync up your database with the server when you come back into the office next time. And that's really where Salesforce automation as an industry took off. And at that point in time, it was parallel to CRM. CRM was customer service. SFA was Salesforce automation. Then in 1997, more or less, marketing automation really took off as a package set of products. Companies were doing marketing automation, but it was really just custom IT projects at that point in time. There was no real packaged solutions up until that point. There weren't any companies who were selling marketing automation. And the reason why this really took off was, frankly, because of email, right? Email as a marketing channel really was the starting point of these companies that now focus on marketing automation and that sort of thing. Lots of, how to build a data warehouse, how to build a data mart, that became package set of tools and that sort of thing. Companies like Epiphany and Business Objects and a few others really kind of were taking off in this space. So in 97, 98, 99, CRM as a term became redefined. It became not just customer service, it became marketing, sales, and service together. This 360-degree view of the customer that I was talking about a little bit earlier. So it's CRM in its current definition. Is relatively new, even though the term has been around for years and years. Now, another key thing that happened at this point in time is all these great applications that were built during the 90s on fat clients and the client-server technology all started getting rewritten into web-based interfaces and going to the multi-tier architecture that we're all familiar with these days with your database server, your application server, your web server, your web interface on the client desktop, that sort of thing. And again, it engendered a whole new crop of companies. And the reason why is because, the key thing being here is that CRM industry is really susceptible to technology shifts, as I said earlier. And let me touch on the last one, and I'll come back to that point. And that around 2000, 2001, the ASP model started picking up, the application service provider. This is Upshot, Salesforce.com, SalesNet. This is where your IT department is no longer involved in your CRM solution, in that you pay somebody else to host the servers and to do everything around managing the back end of the solution, and you just access the application through a web interface. Getting a little bit of glazed looks, a little bit of nods there. Everybody's kind of following me here. We all got what's going on? Okay, great. So the reason why the ASP model really started kicking off in the early 2000s was because there was just this really long history through the 1990s of really expensive failed implementations of CRM software. Now, with the Y2K bug and the internet kicking off and the whole dot-com explosion that was taking place during the mid-90s, lots of software got sold that really didn't quite match what the salesperson was talking about when he was selling it, right? Everybody familiar with that, failed expectations there. And so there was a real big backlash in the CRM industry against companies like Siebel and pretty much any company that was selling an on-premise solution. And the business units, the VPs of sales, were saying, I'm going to go, this is kind of Clint's editorial comment at this point in time. But they started blaming the IT departments. You know, the IT departments, they didn't know what they were doing. They didn't do their due diligence well enough. They got bought into these pipe dreams that these chief architects from these different software vendors were coming in and selling to them. And let's take IT out of the picture. Let's go directly to an ASP model, and let's just swipe the credit card and pay for my CRM solution that way. Again, a shift in how technology is delivered, and CRM is right there on top of it. The reason being, the kind of the key idea behind all this, is that companies are willing to reinvest completely in CRM solutions every 4 to 5 years. Reason being is because that data around who talked to who when, what was sold to whom, what I'm trying to sell them tomorrow, really only has a lifespan of importance over 6 months, a year, maybe a year and a half, whereas financial data, accounting data, you know, you can't really, companies won't swap out those systems every 4 to 5 years. Companies will sit on a back office solution for 8-10 years because there's so much regulatory influence on how that data is managed, that, you know, the business lives, breathes, and dies on the inventory control, on accounting, that sort of thing. But with the front office solutions, the CRM solution, companies are willing to switch them out. They're willing to try something new every couple of years. And so that's really kind of kept the CRM industry at the forefront of technology. As these big technology shifts happen, the CRM industry redefines itself right along with that technology shift. So what's the next technology shift? We all know that, right? That's why we're here today, open source, right? Open source has just been, it's not only from my perspective a technology shift, but it's a marketing business model, it's a marketing shift, it's a selling shift, it's a completely different way of looking at software. And this is where, you know, Sugar CRM has really kind of been focusing itself over the last year as we've got launched the company. And that enterprise software, just software in general, software companies are being redefined around an open source business model. Some of the key things that, you know, our customers, they tell us about, they love the fact that there's no more vendor lock-in, right? We have an open source project. If our company died tomorrow for whatever reason, right, the project would live on. The source code would live on. There's developers worldwide who are learning about Sugar CRM and building practices, building businesses around Sugar CRM today. And whether the company stays or goes, the product lives on. And that gives them a sense of confidence that they aren't locked into our product through us as a vendor. Also, the dramatic reduction in risk. You know, we all know this as people who live, eat, and breathe open source, and that an API set is only as good as the engineer who thought it up, right? How many times have you been doing some sort of development and you're just blocked by the API because the engineer who thought up the API didn't put some feature in there, or maybe there's a bug behind it or something like that? You know, CRM is all about integrating your customer data into the rest of the enterprise, right? CRM doesn't live by itself as a silo of data within the business. You want to, you know, when somebody's buying something through the sales rep, you want to track that fact back into your order management system. So CRM systems are always integrated into back office systems in some shape, way, or form. And what's really been when I spent my time out in the field as a professional services project manager doing implementations, I don't know how many times I'd be blocked by an API that I couldn't work around, that wouldn't allow me to get my job done. With open source, you just work around it. Change the API. Change the code behind it. You're not blocked by that one engineer who was thinking about one thing when he built his particular definition a year ago. And this translates into also the LAMP stack, the Linux, Apache, MySQL, PHP, you know, Python, all the others that derivatives that go with it. You know, I personally think it's the best application stack that I've ever personally worked with, technology stack that I've ever worked with. And the reason being is it's simple, it's straightforward, it's low cost, if not free, if you want it to be free, right? And this is translating into very successful on-premise deployments at lower cost. And what it's doing, it's what I've been really excited about myself, it's re-empowering the IT departments over the past year. Now, I've spent my career working with large companies and small companies, and I started my career in the IT department at PG&E. And, you know, how many times does the IT department just get, you know, squashed because some software was bought that doesn't do what they need it to do? And with the open source model that we're seeing here in the LAMP stack and the simplicity of the and power of the LAMP stack, what we're finding is that, you know, IT departments love working with our software because it puts them back in the driver's seat. So with that, the Sugar CRM as a company got launched. And that was back in last spring. So this is my ego page, pardon me. I'll only keep it up here for a minute. But I wanted to put a face to the names, right? These are real people. These are people, the three of us were working at Epiphany. John on the left, me in the middle, we were product managers. He ran the sales product line. I ran the customer service product line. Jacob there he runs our engineering department. He'd been in engineering at Epiphany, and he is an absolute brilliant engineer and architect. He got his degree down here at UCLA, actually. That's where he got his master's, was at UCLA. But the three of us came together a year ago, and we knew that there was a better way to deliver applications, better way to deliver enterprise applications. We had spent our career working for the big corporations. You know, we got all the names down there, right? And the three of us, as you know, we call ourselves product guys. The reason we got into software is to build the best possible product and deliver the best possible product to the end user. And we had spent our career working for these different companies where, you know, that vision kept getting hijacked by, you know, some sales rep is closing the big deal at the end of the quarter, and the only way we can close this deal is if we promise that we're going to do these five features that really benefit nobody. And in fact, that customer's probably never going to actually deploy those features. But to close the deal, we promise them. And so our product plans get totally hijacked, and all these usability improvements that we're going to put into the application in this particular release get shuffled out the door, and we do this one little project for a customer that doesn't benefit anybody else. That's one case in point. But basically, we just got really kind of frustrated with the proprietary development model. We felt that there was a better way to do software development. And with that, you know, I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but this is kind of what took us, this is the set of thoughts that took us into launching the Sugar CRM open source project. We decided there's a better way of building software. And so in the past 2 years, we had been introduced to open source because we were building a J2E-based solution at Epiphany, and through that had become introduced to open source, and we're using open source components. And we weren't really contributing back in. We were kind of that typical open source enthusiast who just takes from the open source world and uses stuff as they want, but doesn't actually contribute back into it. And we started looking at the open source world about a year ago. In fact, a year ago exactly now, we were spending after hours, John and I, and just kind of building out what a business model would look like and how would you actually do this as a company. And so we launched the company. We quit our jobs in early April, started writing the source code in early April, got our 1.0 out in the beginning of July, got funded as a company by a venture capital firm in July, hired our first employees in August, did our 2.0 in November, started really pushing the company forward. We're now at 17 employees. And really just kind of redefining what CRM is all about. It's been really exciting. We've gotten a lot of notice because we're shaking up the industry right now because we're delivering a really high-quality product at a much lower cost and redefining the way CRM solutions are delivered to the marketplace. All right, so marketing aside, I'll take off my hat there and stop talking about us and start talking a little bit more about what were the ideas that kind of just really initially brought us focused on open source. You know, the thing that really, this is my slide, I built this one here. This is the thing that was frustrating me as a product manager, right? There's all these great ideas going on out there in the world. People using the software, people using other software, but, you know, end users using applications, having ideas, and they are so far removed from the people who actually write the software, right? There's business analysts, there's IT departments, there's field implementation partners. There's new customers. They're all funneling ideas into an engineering department, and all those ideas have to go through a product manager, and all those ideas go through a product manager and through one engineering department, and out comes, hopefully, one good idea. And what that equals is just, frankly, limited innovation. And with open source, this is what I saw, a different way of building software. You get the core project going, you focus on the core project, you keep some sanity around that core project, and you unleash it into the world. And you let the bazaar take place, right? For those of you who read The Cathedral and The Bazaar. And that's where you get the unlimited innovation. That's where you get IT department after IT department. You get people coding on for fun on the side. But mostly what we've seen is businesses that are focused on delivering a business solution, extending the product to meet their needs, and not being limited by one development engineering team back in the Silicon Valley who maybe isn't really in tune with what's going on in the real world. So why is sugar really taken off? Why do people care, right? I think we've got a really unique value proposition here. And this unique value proposition is we started with one core tenet, right? The application has to be lightning fast. For those of you that ever had a chance to go to our demo site, that's just, it's up on our .com, shared with a variety of other applications, and we typically have anywhere from 150 to 200 concurrent users hammering away on our application just for demo purposes, right? And we're consistently getting sub-second response rates on that server. The reason being is because, frankly, I'm a big fan of PHP myself. I think PHP is one of the best environments to deliver this type of application.
What's the hardware that's running on?
That's a dual processor Xeon server running Red Hat.
Okay, and you say there's a couple hundred hammering on that hardware. Okay.
Yeah, we typically have anywhere from 150 to 200 concurrent users just doing kind of lightweight stuff. You know, they're just they're testing out the application, going through screens, that type of thing.
What's the load on that run?
From what perspective?
Basically, how hard is it to pass that machine? I'm trying to figure out, like, how many users for how much machine.
Right. CPU sits idle probably around 15 to 20%. We've also got the Zen acceleration suite running on, so I don't know if everybody's familiar with the Zen Canaveral, I think is the product name. It basically supercharges PHP, caches a lot of stuff, that type of thing. But the CPU just sits around 15, 20%, and it's mostly database queries that where it's bound. So in fact, we have the database running on the same server. We put the database on another server, we figure we get even better throughput. So the key idea here was fast. It's got to be fast, got to be fast, got to be fast. Okay, repeating the question was, first question we talked for a minute there was the load on the system, and that's where I was answering about things like the CPU utilization and that sort of thing. The second question was, is the application built around a model view controller concept? I think we're at, you know, if you were to follow it exactly, MVC2 is where we're sitting. Where too much of the business, too much of the UI logic is captured at the lower levels, and so actually something that we're working on to build out a little bit further. We got a new SOAP interface that's helping us envision that as well. Second question was around lack of transaction support in MySQL. Now it's all done in the PHP layer around tracking of that type of logic. So the transaction support isn't impacting us at all. Okay, back to the slide here. So basically the key idea here is we've got a really fast application. People like to use the application. That's the key idea. I mean, that's the number one thing that you'll find in any open source project, right? And it's such a Darwinian world out there. If your product isn't fun to use, good to use, easy to use, it's not going to get adopted. People aren't going to look at it. It's just going to kind of die on the vine, right? Second from our kind of value proposition is our deployment options. This is kind of gets out of the world of open source for a minute, but talks about the fact that customers want options, right? So in traditional CRM, you could only buy the software, then you could only deploy it on site. Then along comes Salesforce.com, Upshot, SalesNet, some of these others, and you can only go through a hosting. You can only use their software with them hosting it, right? I think Salesforce.com talks about the no software model, right? We deliver all that to you. You can deploy our software on-premise on your own hardware. You can buy an appliance from us preloaded with all the software configured and ready to go. Or we actually also offer a hosted solution where you can, if you don't have the internal resources to deploy to inside your business at this point in time, you can start off with the hosted version. And then if the application proves its worth and it's something you do want to invest in, then you can bring it in-house with either buying the appliance directly from us, or just buying the software and running it in-house. Or you don't have to buy it here. You know, none of that, that you can run the open source version in-house for free, right? The architecture. I've been bragging about the architecture for a few minutes, and I won't go into much more detail on that. But basically, it's a really clean environment that runs really fast that we find developers find very approachable. In fact, that's kind of one of the key reasons why we didn't go with a J2E-based solution, why we didn't build around J2E, even though we'd spent the last 3 or 4 years doing that at our previous company. J2E is, frankly, just, in my opinion, too complex for the average IT developer to find approachable. And PHP is just, you know, it runs 9 million websites worldwide. It's extremely approachable. People have, you know, the average developer is quite happy to open it up, start working around inside of it, doesn't find it too confusing. comes back to us if they need help, goes to our forums, that sort of thing, and gets a lot of traction very quickly. Cost of ownership, 15% of proprietary solutions. You know, if you look at the total cost of ownership of a Linux, Apache, MySQL, PHP, Sugar solution, it's just dramatically less expensive when you, no matter how you slice and dice it, whether you do all the work yourself and you go entirely with the open source free version, or you start investing in companies like Red Hat, MySQL, Zend, and Sugar and that sort of thing. However you look at it, it's just a, frankly, much more reasonably priced solution. And for us, what that means is we're getting to customers who have never bought CRM before. We're talking to people who just never would have bought it otherwise because it was too expensive, wasn't meeting their needs. And that's something that we find really exciting because there's a whole new world of consumers worldwide who are buying and looking at CRM for the very first time. So let's spend a minute and talk about the real cost of traditional CRM solutions. And this is really kind of where the business buyers get really hung up, right? You know, you had to buy a lot of hardware and a lot of software before you even found out if the solution would work for you. You know, the typical model is you invest in all this software and you hope it works, right? And you go through, and lots of companies have spent literally millions of dollars deploying CRM solutions to find out at the end of the day their users hate it, spend all their time tracking their information in Excel and inside of, you know, Word and Outlook and that sort of thing, and then transferring as little data as they can absolutely do into the CRM system so that their managers can have the reports that they need to run the business. That's the history of CRM. And we're changing that model by providing a completely different way of looking at the solution. First, you only pay for software that adds value. You can deploy a complete CRM solution at no software cost whatsoever with the open source solutions on this page, on this slide right here, and find out if it works for you. In fact, we have people who come to us and they want to buy our professional edition, and they've been running the open source edition for the last 3, 4, 5 months. Love it, have been working with it, finally want to establish a relationship with us, want to become part of our professional community, and want to invest in making sure that they have a vendor there to support them as time goes on. And it's a vendor that they trust. You know, they know that we are delivering a real product that's meant to, that will solve their needs, because they've already been running it in-house for the last several months.
Are there differences in the professional version and the open source one?
There's a couple features in the professional edition that aren't in the open source one. There's about, if it's the same code base. There's a couple, and it's a very modular. It's specifically around some modules being able to plug in modules that you need for your business. And there's a couple modules that are in the professional edition that aren't in the open source edition. About, I'd say, 80% of the code base is shared across the two. The one that's most important that companies really focus on is the team selling module. And basically what that means is, if you want the ability to restrict whether or not somebody else can see your data, can see what deals you're working on, that's only in the professional edition. And that's really, you know, from a kind of a business model perspective, that makes sense. You know, companies that have 5-10 sales reps and they're a small company and they're just looking for a solution to get up and going, they don't need the team selling feature. And as they grow as a company, and frankly they can afford software and they can invest in a relationship with us, They buy our professional edition, which is priced at $239 per user, and then they get the team selling feature.
Is that per year per user?
It is per year per user. Yeah, exactly. So you know, last year's call to action: check out the software. Go to sugarcrm.com. Download the open source edition. Check it out. Learn what it's all about. It's an extremely exciting environment to work in. I've spent the last, you know, 7 months, 8 months building this environment, and you know, I've been working on these types of solutions for years now. And you know, I'm talking about my own stuff here, so it's kind of my baby. But I think it's a really great environment to work in. We're launching our new developer zone this week, so it'll be a little bit easier for you folks to kind of figure out where exactly to plug in and where you can how you can contribute, how you can extend the software if you're trying to deliver a CRM solution for your business, that type of thing. And you can contact us anytime, dev@sugarcrm.com. We have online forums as well, quite active. You know, that's one of the things that we look at about our company is, is, you know, we try as hard as we possibly can to have a very open, transparent view to the world out there. You know, you can go to our forums and you'll see the good, the bad, the ugly. Right? There's all kinds of, you know, discussions going on in there, and, you know, I'm sure you're all familiar with forum software and what that brings to the table there. But so that's kind of the end of it for the pre-canned presentation. I kind of blazed through it relatively quick because I saw that there's a lot of questions out there, so I want to leave some time to do a Q&A.
Yeah, why start the old CRM project? Were there other open source CRM projects that just
didn't meet the needs? That's a good point there. So the question was, why start your own CRM project? And basically, you know, there was probably about 20 different projects up on SourceForge. Some of them are pure CRM. Some of them, like Tutos or eGroupware or Compuware, claimed some CRM functionality, but they were actually focused on different things. And then they had a little bit of CRM functionality. And then there were some projects out there that were already doing that were focused primarily on CRM, and they were, frankly, we felt we could do a better job. And we wanted to build a company around it. We wanted to build a company focused on building the best, highest quality CRM product out there and focus on it full time. You know, all of us are paid employees of the company that work on the project full time, and this is our career, this is our job. And so part of that meant, you know, starting from scratch.
And also, as far as you're talking about integrating into the back office, mm-hmm. Is that something that's possible that's supported with the open source product?
Yeah, our whole SOAP interface layer is all part of the open source product, so you can absolutely do all the integrations. In fact, we're looking at doing a QuickBooks integration here pretty quickly, and there's a project called WebERP. It's up on SourceForge. WebERP.org is the URL. It's a pretty good replacement for QuickBooks, and it's starting to gain some steam. They've been around for about a year and a half, 2 years. I think they're just doing it part-time because it's gone a little bit slower than probably a lot of the people out there using it would wish it is. But in the last few months, it's really starting to pick up and gain a lot of adoption. Kind of the basic idea is just kind of from taking a step back and thinking about how a process would flow, right? So you have a sales rep talking to a customer, you know, at the very beginning of it, you start off an email marketing campaign, and you send out some emails to people, and they respond to the email, and they're talking to a salesperson about actually buying a product. And then as they go through the process of buying the product and the salesperson selling the product, at the end of it, you execute an order, right? You actually, the sales rep has to put in the order somewhere, and that order transaction needs to go back into a financials package as an invoice, right? So you need to send out an invoice, or you directly bill the customer and done a credit card transaction, and you want to track the fact that revenue needs to be going in the system. So you want to have a tight integration from the sales application back into the financials application, so you can track what was sold and that sort of thing.
What about the databases that you integrate with on the back end? You mentioned MySQL.
That's always supported this time. Yeah. That's always support this time as MySQL. No one's been asking.
I mean, Postgres or Oracle would not.
No one's been asking for it. We built a whole database abstraction layer that's in our open source product as well that you could actually, I mean, take anybody in this room who's got database experience, you know, a two-week effort, and you could integrate back into Postgres or Oracle. No one's asked us to do it, so we just haven't done it yet. We've been totally expecting to do it. Yeah, we're expecting to build a Postgres next. Frankly, we've just been waiting for, you know, demand. Right now, nobody has said, my business relies on it going to Postgres. Everybody's been saying, yeah, it'd be nice if you did it. And that's just where it's been so far. You've been putting your hand up. Go ahead.
Can you talk a little about inputs and outputs of data, like importing contacts, mm-hmm. You know, what formats you support, and also
CSV and tab delimited. Yeah.
And then do you do the same on the export side?
Yeah. Actually, straight out to CSV, not tab delimited, but you can import tab delimited or CSV files.
Okay, so coming in is just as easy as going out.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. In fact, we have pre-built templates for importing data from Salesforce.com and Apt. Yeah, so the migration there is pretty straightforward.
I'm sorry, did you say Apt?
Yeah. Brad?
Can you tell us more about the cost? You know, you mentioned a hardware installation. You'd sell a complete. Can you give us any numbers, any figures?
Our single processor system, boy, no one hold our sales department to these numbers, Clint said. But it's on our website, absolutely, but the single processor is 3,500, and the dual processor system, these are both rack-mounted systems, is 5,000.
Okay, and then on top of that, you'd be paying 200 and something a year for the professional
You know, we've had lots of I think we're bundling in a certain number of seats at this point in time.
Okay.
Yeah, frankly, I don't, I wish I did, but we're kind of at the point now that the sales department runs the numbers, and I hear about it at the end of the day, and I don't have that plugged into my head right now. I think you had your hand up first, and I'll come back to you.
Sure, but out of curiosity, so you have some investors in your company,
and yeah.
When you told them that everything that you're going to be put back into the open source?
Yeah, a lot of sleepless nights over the summer. Yeah. Let me tell you. Will they actually believe this? What? So we have two investors. Our first investor invested $2 million in us back in July. And we're announcing this week, actually, our second investor who put $5.75 million into us back in December. Boy, what VCs and how they invest. That's a whole nother session. Kind of boils down to they like to put a lot of MBA analytics around it to make themselves sound smart, but it's mostly just a gut take thing when it comes down to it. They invest, you know, it's like they're like gamblers at Vegas, you know, their little how to properly work the craps table. But when it comes down to it, they put their number on, they put their money there. The initial investor really just saw that enterprise, the basic premise, the reason why they were interested in open source, it turns out, we didn't really know at the time, was quite the hot topic in the VC community. Enterprise software as we know it today is doomed. That's what the VCs believe, that the current model is doomed, that people are done paying these really extraordinarily huge high prices for software that doesn't need to cost that much. And so we came in, but they didn't know what the next model was going to be, right? And we've been coming in with this open source model and saying, this is the next new model. And then they just got really hung up on the fact, but why is anybody going to buy it again, right? And so really the key value proposition that we've come around is first we have a professional community, right? And our customers really, really dig the fact that there's a professional community. They like participating in an open source community type environment. But as we all well know, open source can get kind of, you know, unruly out there. And you may not get answers to your questions. And you kind of really have to take it upon yourself to dive deep into a project to get really a lot of value out of it from an open source perspective, right? And keep in mind, CRM is all about modifying the systems, right? It's not like, you know, you're going to take some product like OpenOffice and just deploy it across the enterprise with zero customizations, right? You're going to take a CRM solution and you're going to modify it. And so your IT developers need to be plugged into a developer network, right, to be successful. And so with that comes came actually a lot of trepidation around, you know, being part of just an open source community where they may or may not get feedback, they may or may not get advice, they may or may not get what they need. And so we run our customers as a professional project. And they really like that. They like the fact that they can communicate with each other, share resources, share ideas amongst each other, that when they ask a question, our customer support department is right on top of it, or our developers are right on top of it, answering those questions. Secondly, a lot of companies, quite frankly, are afraid of open source licenses. They just are. You know, the SCO kickback, whatever it may be, but a lot of companies just are uncertain about it. And so the fact that we offer our professional edition under a standard end-user license agreement, companies like that. They feel safe around that. Okay. And third, there are features in the professional edition that aren't in the open source edition. Now, those very same features are actually getting developed out in the open source community right now. All right. So it's not like we're putting a lock-in saying, oh, no, Sugar's got these features and no one else can build them. People are building those as well. You know, if people build a business around the Sugar platform, we're happy. It just keeps driving Sugar forward. Back to you.
One of the things about bringing down the cost is that it opens up the market opportunity to much wider
and
smaller companies.
Absolutely.
A lot of those companies are not used to using anything that's server-based or web-based. Not
hosted solution.
Typically, separate PC individual platforms.
Yep.
So there's a real barrier to learning and becoming accommodated to using that, and like training barrier, educational barrier for a lot of companies.
Yes.
I've got a couple of questions that you can kind of take however you want, which is, how do you overcome that? How do you get smaller companies to learn that?
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, just characterize your user base a little bit. How many companies, range of sizes,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing.
So to your first question, how do you get smaller companies to adopt running their own server, running a server-based platform? Our very first answer to that is quite simple. We have a hosted model. You don't have, as a small company, you...
It's more of a behavior issue.
It's going to a web-based application?
Issue.
To going from a fat client application to a web-based application? Is that what you're talking about?
To go to a group application.
Ah.
From individual, just to use, just to make the leap to a serious
right.
period.
Right. That's a challenge for us, I think, later in 2005. It's amazing right now. Repeating your question here, the question was, how do you get people to go from using Excel and Word, which is entirely a me and my tools perspective, to working inside of a groupware application and sharing data and operating in that type of environment? That's a path that's already been paved by others before us. So there's already, Exchange is a perfect example. Email is a perfect example. People are starting to get used to working within a collaborative environment, right? Secondly, the other CRM vendors that have been around have been paving that path for the last 10 years for us. So today, but Act as well. Act has got 500,000 users.
I can use a perfect cloud example where a company buys Act.
Right, as their silo of information.
Yeah, right, old little database.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Company thinks like, for whatever reason, we can't share our data.
Right.
To put on a server.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
And I don't understand if it's a comfort issue or what. But
we have not run into that yet. And I think I know what you're saying, and I absolutely expect us to be there. And that's going to be a training issue for us later in the year as we start needing. Right now, we're frankly just responding to inbound response. We have not made a single cold call yet.
Okay. Well, and then how about the characterizing your user base?
Anybody who has a sales department.
You don't have any customer data, any kind of profiles? Or
we do. It's amazing how scattered it is. There aren't many trends. I mean, the biggest trend. Okay, I'm being a little flipped there, but it across industries. It's literally across industries. We have agricultural. We have computer. We have technology. We have mortgage business. I mean, it's literally across all kinds of verticals. And it's
medium size.
The medium size deployments right now median is 20 users. This point in time, but we're going to be closing our first 100 plus user deals over the course of the next. Now keep in mind, I've got about 4,000 live sites of Sugar out there that I know nothing about, right? From the open source perspective, I don't have any spyware in the application at all. I know nothing about them, right? Other than the fact that we just crested 100 paying customers at the first of the year. Going pretty quickly. So it's going past that mark pretty quickly. The one thing that I would say is at this point in time, most of our customers are early adopters from a technology perspective. They're companies that like Linux, that are interested in Linux, like I said, we have not yet even, we're completely responding to inbound at this point in time. We're not even doing any outbound. And all that inbound is coming from people who are already open source savvy. Right, and that's completely flooded us from a 15-person company perspective. We're growing to the point where I'm looking forward to the day when we make our first cold call. But nice to get there, but we're not even there yet.
What happens to your business model when you say the things that are in the pro version now are being worked on and written in the open source community?
Right.
What happens when somebody pops up and say, okay, here's the module for sugar that does
right. And they actually build a business around it, right? Instead of just being somebody who contributes the code and leaves it sitting there.
Even if it's, whether it's a group that builds a business model around it, or if there's just basically one person or a group of people that says,
who dedicates himself to it, right?
Here's the code that does it, we're going to maintain it because we use it, and well, here it is, an open source for the world.
Absolutely. Those are my sleepless nights, right? So the question was, what happens when people start building the features that are in the pro version and making it part of the open source edition? Well, one, that's happening already. Okay. Secondly, I want to get back to my previous point, that when people choose to buy the software, choose to enter a business relationship with us, the very first thing that they're actually looking for is the pro community, right? And now that pro community is not restricted to just paying customers. That pro community is open to anybody who contributes code back into the core product. We have a program we call the Recognized Developer Program. So it's not even necessarily contributing back into the core product, but if you build a really useful, cool, additional feature to the product, you can become one of our recognized developers. And recognized developers get the pro edition. Our partners, right? So there's tons of companies out there around the world who have built businesses around deploying CRM, getting back to this gentleman's question earlier about how do you change the behavior patterns of the end users. There's a whole universe of professional services companies that focus on doing CRM deployments where technology is just one facet of the overall solution, and change management from a process perspective as an end user, or also an end user perspective, is also critical to that. And those partners of ours are part of our professional community as well. So when customers come to us and they put money on the table, the thing that they're really looking for more than anything else is a relationship with us, and the ability to have a louder voice, I guess you might say, a voice that gets heard first.
How large is your development team, and how many developers do you think actually should be coding?
Growing every day. How large? Well, in our forums, we have two sets of forums. We have the forums up on SourceForge, and then we have the forums up on our site. Got several thousand registered users. I haven't looked at the statistics lately about who is the most active. The toughest part there the real answer is I don't know, right? It's growing every day, and there's a lot of feedback in terms of being able to say exactly how large is the community from people who are actually actively involved in using the software, deploying the software, customizing the software, versus people who just kind of fly by and make some comments on the forums and maybe just download the software and go, oh, that's interesting, and move on. It's really hard to tell the difference between those two classes. We definitely have hundreds upon hundreds of people who are giving us input on a consistent basis. How many of those are real sugar users versus people who are just checking it out and voicing their opinion? It's tough to say. So the question was, what commercial product are we most comparable to? Well, the customers who are coming to us and are migrating off of other systems are coming from mostly from Act and Salesforce.com. So I would say, you know, that's pretty much the answer. Then third, isn't there, is a product called Goldmine?
Have
you
had anybody successfully migrate off Goldmine?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, we have. The question was, do we have people successfully migrate off Goldmine? And yes, we have had that. Another question?
So people who are going to product, what is it that they're finding in your product? And is it typically the business people who find you and start using your hosted service, or the IT people who download it and deploy it internally?
So the question is who are the people that are finding Sugar, and what are they finding most interesting about it? Is that kind of a good paraphrase of your question? Okay. So it's pretty much, as we started the project, as we started this whole endeavor, the people who initially were finding us were IT folks up on SourceForge checking out. You know, we were Project of the Month back in October and got a lot of great publicity and marketing value out of that. So it's definitely started off in IT. Now, we've just kicked up our our outbound PR angle and marketing angle, and we're now doing, you know, we're going to start putting some advertisements in magazines. We're doing stuff on CRM Daily, CRM Guru, a variety of these other websites. And so right now, I'd say it's probably 60-40 IT folks finding us and 40% business folks finding us. Now, why do they like us? Really, you know, I encourage you to go to the website and take a look at the demo. The application is really easy to use. It's fun to use. We're the very first CRM application out there to have a concept of themes. We have a shred theme, snowboarding. You know, the whole app has got icons and a top header bar around. You know, it seems a little silly. Seems like, what's the value to that? But when you're talking to salespeople who don't like using the application to begin with, right? Looking at a user interface that puts a smile on their face, it's amazing the amount of value that's coming out. So we have a snowboarding theme, we have a Paradise Island theme, we have a golfing theme. And I tell you, that's like one of the biggest things that salespeople comment back to us. You know, call them superficial, whatever, but they like it. You know? And so they like the fact that they can, when they look at the app, it puts a smile on their face. When they use the app, it's easy to use. I saw a hand over here. Yeah.
I'm just wondering if you migrated anybody from AppCap CRM, or if you feel like you've
not consciously
taking market share from that at all.
The question is, are we taking any customers away from AppCap, and have we migrated anybody off AppCap? I say not consciously because we have this extremely easy import mechanism. It's CSV file based, right? Comma separated value. So. People, as long as you can get data out of your previous system into CSV file, you can import it. We have this mapping. You know, you click on import, you choose the file that you're importing from. The next screen maps the columns, right? So you map the columns in our system to the columns in the CSV file. It's that simple. And we've got people migrating all the time. So I've seen some discussion on our forums around ACPAC. I know a few people have done it. How big of a momentum going on, couldn't tell you right now. That's one of the amazing things about doing this as an open source project, is you just don't always know what's going on out there. It really, it's taken on a life of its own. We're at, by the way, just to let everybody know, time check wise, we are at 11 o'clock, and we do have
five more minutes,
okay. And I'm here for the rest of the day. I'll be around afterwards. Feel free to ask questions to me directly. But, you know, final questions, please.
Just related question to the ACPAC.
Sure.
You know, one of the big selling points for the ACPAC CRM is that they integrate with the ACPAC
financials.
Financial products.
Right.
And, you know, if you for a second to discuss, do you have canned integration tools that allow you to take the live data?
Not yet. Keep in mind, like I said, we were three guys back in July, and here we are in February, and we're four times the size, but we haven't done everything yet, which is one of the whys. You know, hey, if you're a developer, love to work with you on making that happen. That's part of the beauty of the open source model, right? But no, not yet. But you know, integrating with financials is definitely on our radar next, because that's clearly where you need to go with a CRM solution.
Yeah, what financials?
QuickBooks. We're building a QuickBooks integration next, looking at doing an integration with WebERP. We think they're a great open source project, and we kind of want to help, you know, give them more value and give us more value as well. So those are the two that we're looking at just right in the middle of our radar right now. And then coming next, we'll kind of see what people are looking for. And frankly, like I said, you know, as an open source platform, people are building and developing stuff around us all the time that I'm not even necessarily aware of.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for coming.